Here's Bob.
Hi, good evening. I'm doing okay. How are you doing? Good. Just push on this one. No, this one's fine. I'm getting whistles up there. Can you hear the whistles down there? No. Okay. He's working on a second career, isn't he? And make sure no one sees you pick up the literature on sexual addiction. At least no one you know. I think it's because there's so little understanding about it. I was thinking to coming here, which is fun, because I got off the plane in the airport at JFK and realized I changed suitcases and I didn't know where I was going. So I called Sierra Tucson to find out where I was going, and everybody was at lunch. I couldn't get anybody to answer the phone in my house. It turned out to be, I just, you know, read a book. I figure I get where I'm supposed to get, and I don't get where I'm not supposed to get. So I could have turned around and gone home if someone hadn't called me back. And I was thinking about stuck, you know, there's about being stuck in your recovery, and there's a real tendency for people to think that if you're physically moving, somehow you're not stuck in your recovery. And you can be going 100 miles an hour and be stuck. I mean, I'm sure most of you heard the old story about you get off the airplane in a new town, but you brought the same person with you. So nothing changes. That's what stuck is about. Stuck is about internal. It's not about external. Certainly we can be stuck in a bad job or a destructive relationship or any number of things, but usually changing the exterior won't do a lot about the insides. Now, yes, there can be a balancing act there. Recovery really is a little like a teeter-totter. You do a little inside work, and that helps you change the outside, and then you change a little more outside, and that necessitates that you do a little more inside work, and then down the path you go. And getting unstuck in recovery, if you feel that's where you're at, is a very simple process. All you have to do is get in touch with your feelings. Express them to others. This will thin out the crowd around you quick. and move on down the road. That's basically all there is to getting unstuck. But we have problems with getting in touch with our feelings. As a rule, women are closer to their feelings than men. There's all kinds of guesswork being done as to why that is. I think it's just because you've been given permission for more feelings as children than we were given as men. As men, we've got to deal with all this bullshit in our society about men don't cry and guys are tough guys and all this crap that's killing us and our children and the women. I mean, it's tragic to think that this is 1991 and children aren't safe in their homes and women aren't safe in their homes, and this is about our need as men to be some mythological version of a man, which is all nonsense. I mean, it really is sad that we were labeled with that or burdened with that. You gals, on the other hand, I find that when you begin to go to work or go after your feelings, you will get to your sadness first. And we men usually will get to our anger first. And the interesting thing is that we men really need to get to the sadness. We need to grieve. We need to cry about the things that we've never cried about that have forced us into actions in our life that have harmed a lot of people just because we couldn't sit down and cry. And women, on the other hand, in this phase of recovery, need to get mad. You know, I mean, some of you have probably never externally displayed anger. My mother did. Once she stopped beating me about age 5 and a half, she became like a non-human. There was never, ever an expression of anger of any kind from that woman from that point on. I'm sure she was very afraid of her anger, because what she had done to me. But she never expressed anger. She was always sweet, always nice, unless she took time to look in her eyes. You know? And if you looked in her eyes, you could see that there was someone in there capable of committing homicide or serving you tea. So glad to see you. Nice you came by. You know. Getting to the feelings is very hard. I mean, I'm grateful. I'm now associated with Sierra Tucson, and I do consulting work for him, and I've been clean and sober for 29 years, and I have never in 29 years aligned myself with any facility of any kind for any reason to do anything. And the only reason that I have aligned myself with this specific facility is because they do and talk and practice the things that I believe in, basically holistic healing, that it is a body, mind, soul disease we're suffering from, and you need to treat the body, and you need to treat the mind, and you need to treat the soul. And if you're not treating all these things, it's the best facility I know of in the country. That's the end of my pitch. I think, to the best of my knowledge, it also has the only non-smoking staff in the country. Their vision is good and they're sincere, you know. And also, Bill has always had me hovering around saying, how the fuck can you talk recovery when they're smoking? You serve this crap? You can't. Food there is good. And I spend time in their eating disorder unit, too. And if you are a professional or somebody interested in it, it's the best I've ever seen. They've really got a program going. I have a lot of fun over there with the people over there. They've got a very solid situation in place. And why am I talking about that? Because sometimes we need some place to go to get to the feeling. There's almost essential that you create a safe environment to get to your feelings if you've never gotten to them before. And that can be very hard to find, because one of the tragedies for those of us who come out of dysfunctional systems is we create around us a world that represents the same kind of system that we came out of. So the minute we begin to try and do any real internal changing, this system that we currently live in today most often is not supportive of what we're trying to do. There's a joke, but it's not a joke, which is, go to your feelings and lose all your friends. Well, it's pretty true. It's really pretty true. What up? Tell him up. I don't have the control. Tell him up. What do you mean? You need me to use the other mic or what? Or put my head down like this? How about we put this on the coat? Better? 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 Okay. Mechanics. Got it. I'm not mechanically inclined either, man. I'm not, you know, never mind. The definition of intimacy, quite simply put, is me being me and letting you see me. That's all there is to intimacy. Me being me and letting you see me. Now, the interesting thing here is it does not take two to do this. A great many of us have spent our lives looking for that person with whom we could be intimate, when reality is I can be intimate with a guy on a bus bench. Now, he may not respond, but it has nothing to do with my capacity for intimacy. My capacity for intimacy, quite simply, is letting you see me. And if I'm hurt, letting you see my hurt. And if I'm angry, letting you see my anger. And if I'm afraid, letting you see my fear. I spent my whole life, man, pretending everything was okay, because I couldn't show you anything that wasn't all right unless I had needed to drive you away, because I already felt insufficient. And so I figured any external example of feelings would be a confirmation that I was flawed, that something was wrong with me. And if somebody said to me today, well, what the hell is recovery all about? I would have to say feeling good, yeah? About myself. That's all I really want to do, is feel good about myself. If I feel good about me, the rest of the things seem to fall into line. My entire life changes. But when I'm running around not feeling good about me, pretending that I'm okay when I'm not, lying to you about, I'm hurt when I'm not hurt. And telling you it didn't matter that you did whatever you did or that you broke whatever date or whatever the hell happened, or that you belittled my work at work. I mean, usually most of us who come out of dysfunctional systems as children will find dysfunctional systems to work in as employees. It's easy to do. It's real easy to do. I had a list. I had a list. I wish I brought it. A friend of mine did a about 60 questions to answer, you know, as to whether or not you work in a dysfunctional system. They're really great. They're very good. They also will ruin your life. I do some workshops, and one of the things I do in a workshop is a real spontaneous thing where people don't know it's coming, and I ask them to list 10 things that they like to do. And you got 3 minutes to put down 10 things you really like to do. When's the last time you did it? How much did it cost? Do you do it alone or with other people? 90% of the people, and this doesn't matter the size of the workshop. The workshop can be 20 people. It can be 200 people. Out of every group, 90% do not put down what they do for a living. Okay? Yeah, I know. Well, but how the hell can you be doing what you want to do when you don't know who you are? You know? I mean, if you're pretending already, how can you do what you want to do if you don't really know who you are? You're going to be doing either what's easy, what works for survival, what the family has passed on to you is a good idea for you because someone else in the family either has or has not done it in the past. One of the things I notice more often than not, after somebody gets really serious about doing family recovery work, family of origin work, healing the feelings, is they usually will change what they do. It just seems like automatic, you know? I've seen guys walk out of 20-year careers and say, you know, I've never liked this job. End of my life, I never liked this job. And suddenly they're building birdhouses. You know? And happy and being paid for it. You know? Happy and being paid for it. Well, we get all kinds. See, if you're trying to... If you're walking around in life feeling like there's something wrong with you, then you're going to try and make up for that external to yourself. So you can't do a job that makes you really happy if you need to do a job that makes you a lot of money because you've got to buy a lot of things so that you look okay. And that's part of the result of this sense of shame inside, is we attempt to fix this externally. If I just find her, you know? Just find her. If I get her, everything will be okay. If I hit the lottery one time, I will have the money I need to be happy. If I just get my body down to the right shape and size, I will be okay. You know, if I have the right car, everything will be all right. And this is how people who are filled with shame try and resolve it. We try and fix what's wrong with us internally with external things. Why? Because it's inconceivable to us that we contain within ourselves all that we will ever need to be really successful. I don't believe that about myself. I didn't used to believe that about myself. I used to think I had to have her, I had to have the car, I had to have the job, I had to hit the lottery. Somehow it had to come to me from outside. And the trap in this, that's a real killer, is we live in a society that supports that concept. That you are the things you own, that you are the shape of your body, that you are what you do for a living, that you are where you live. You're anything but what goes on inside of you. I mean, if a car was transportation, there would be no need to put letters and numbers on it. Right? But it's not just transportation, you see. When you're blowing down the turnpike in your BMW 635 CS I, and you pass some poor, inadequate human being in his BMW 635 CS, no I. You have a moment where you feel worthwhile. BMW has given you this for $40,000. A sense of well-being. However, short-lived, because soon somebody's going to blow by with their BMW 735 CSIXX. And now you're left to slump back down in the seat into the place of humility where you belong, because you're really a shameful human being. It is with everything. Watch your commercials on television. What kind of hair stuff do you use? For women, it goes even to the douche. If you're not using the correct douche, my God, you know, we wouldn't even want to think what can happen to you, you know. And Special K, right, the pinch an inch, the guy, I hate the pinch, because I always can pinch an inch. It really makes me mad. That commercial dumps me in a depression every time I see it. You know? Because somehow, if I can get a hold of a piece of flesh on my body, the insinuation is that something's wrong with me. See? So if you've come out of a system that told you, or somehow implied or conveyed to you the message as a child that there was something wrong with you, that you weren't welcome, that you weren't wanted, that you weren't okay, and you then are shoved into a society that supports that concept, there's no hope. You're in a rat race for the whole time. And school will not help. I mean, like I was a kid, I had an attention deficit in school. They didn't have the term attention deficit when I went to school. You were slow. And slow was said in such a way that it was very clear that something was wrong with you if you were slow. Okay? Well, I was coming out of a highly tense, violent home. So I'm not just a kid who can answer a question in class, right? Teacher would put up on the board in class 2 plus 2 and point to me and say, "Bobby, what's 2 plus 2? I'd like to answer her, but I have some things I have to process before I answer her. First, I need to know why she wants to know. Because I've been asked questions at home, given answers, and gotten dropped cold, right? Second, I need to know, does she know?" Because if she's got a different concept of what 2 plus 2 is than I have, I'm in trouble again, because she's big and I'm small. And I need, you know, I'm trying to work all this out in my mind, and while I'm trying to work all this out, some other child in the class whose whole role, the only way they can survive their home is by being perfect, throws up their hand and says, "It's 4, teacher." Now I have a need to kill 2 people. Okay? And they send home one more note. "He seems bright, but he's slow." Which I always, you know, as I got older, I would read those notes and think, "Seems bright, but he's slow." How can you be slow and seem bright? I never could, you know, doesn't get along well with others. Well, of course not. They keep answering the goddamn question, you know. How can you get along with others when they're continually humiliating and embarrassing you, you know? And you're already shame-filled. You got to get rid of them. That's what you have to do with them. So if the reason that it's so essential to get unstuck is to get to the feelings, is, believe it or not, the answers to every problem you've got lays within you. You have in you, this minute, everything you'll ever need to have a really great life, possibly buried under a lot of repressed feelings. Okay? Well, we're taught to repress feelings early on. From, "I'll give you something to cry about," that's a good one, worked on me, to subtle things, like if your toy is broken and you begin to cry, they say to you, no, no, it's okay, we'll get you another. Don't grieve, replace. A lot of us do that with people. We never grieve the end of a relationship. We never feel the pain at the end of a relationship. We never really say goodbye. We just replace with someone else. It's a lot of ways to turn somebody off their feelings. And I always thought all my life that to be one of these wimpy people who laughs really loud in public, you know, or cries worse in public, or who gets angry and lets people know that they have angered them, you know, it would just be exhausting. I mean, how can you spend, if you spend your whole day walking around, get off of my foot, you know, just like that, you've got to be dead at the end of the day. I mean, you can't possibly have any energy left to do anything. You know, work, make love, eat, anything. You've got to be completely burned out. Well, I was about 2 years into therapy. I walked into the therapist's office one morning and I said to her, okay, look, we got big problems at the studio. I've got to get into the office. I have got to write a scene the minute I get there and take it to the set so it can shoot before noon today. I do not have time to get into anything heavy. Yes, right, not good to say to a therapist. As well-meaning as they are, they can't let that one go. You know what I mean? I'm sure she would like to have let me go easy, but anyway, she didn't. So, an hour later, after crying and sobbing and being curled up in a ball on the couch and beating it until my knuckles bled and reverting to a small child trying to flick off the blows of the parent and just and screaming, which was always the hardest thing for me to do, I left sort of like, you know. And she just sort of gave me a little pat on the butt and out the door I go, right? Have a nice day, is right. Come again. I went into the studio where I promptly sat down at my typewriter and wrote more words, better words, faster than I had ever written at any time before in my life. And as I was headed down to the set with the pages, the little truth voice in me said, they've been lying to us. It is in the expression of the feelings comes the energy. It is in the repression of the feelings comes death. Whoa. Interesting. Interesting. And children know this, you see? When you talk about feelings, it's like almost a foreign language, and particularly for a lot of us who saw 30 more than a few years ago, it's like, feelings? You know, nobody talks feelings. What are feelings? Feelings are what you were born with. You arrived with a full set of feelings. These aren't taught. Feelings aren't taught. They aren't instructed. I'm a father of a 3.5-year-old daughter. I'm very current on this stuff, okay? Sometimes more current than I'd like to be. Anyway, my daughter arrived with a capacity for sadness that's heartbreaking. She can get so sad. I mean, over some, she can sit in this poor little helpless person on the floor with her blanket just destroyed, right? Of course, I go with her immediately. Laugh? She has laughed so hard she has fallen off of her feet. Went down, right? It was so funny she fell over. I spent most of my life going, that's funny. You know. My life sort of began and ended here, you know? And then, poor whores, she gets angry. This angelic, blue-eyed, little blonde girl child gets angry. Big time angry. From 6 months old on, when she was old enough to sit up, she would double her fists up so tight that they would turn blue. She'd cut off the circulation. She'd sit there on the floor. She'd frown, you know, she'd furrow her brow, and she'd scream at the top of her lungs. I mean, her face would just turn bright red, right? And this spot here would turn white because she'd cut off the circulation here, too, right? And she'd just go, just scream bloody murder. And when she realized that in this position she was too constricted, she would then throw out the arms, lean back the head, and hurl herself backwards on the floor where she could lay spread out completely and really get it out. Huh? Clean the system. Now, it's always been supported in our house, you know. Worst thing that happens is one of us just steps over, you know, as she's doing this. And she happens to be in a doorway or something you need to get through, right? It's okay? Let us know when you're done. And one of the things that was interesting is to watch her learn about appropriate expression of anger without injuring herself all on her own. Because eventually, within a very short period of time, she'd double up her fist, furrow her brow, put her head down, scream, yeah! Throw her arms out, put her head back, and then she'd go. She'd look first, see? Because on a couple of occasions, she was too close to the wall. Right? And on a couple of occasions, she was over a tile floor. I mean, porcelain tile, clay tile, not bouncy linoleum. She's arrived with these feelings. Well, let's get spiritual, and if she's a child of God, the feelings must be a gift from God. And yet the interesting thing I find out is we try and run from that gift our whole lives. Yet my feelings are my only connection with my humanness. And when I am into my feelings, I care about you too. And injustices suddenly matter to me in the world because I can feel them. They aren't just an intellectual exercise of, isn't that sad? 60 children went over the cliff in a bus, touching, you know, and walk away. Now it hurts very bad. You know, it will make me cry. I got into, when I was doing a promotional tour on the book, I got into it with a newscaster who was interviewing me. And I was saying how good it would be for people to see feelings. And the guy said, well, you know, we report the news every night. We can't just sit there and fall apart, you know? I said, why not? You know, I think it would be very healthy if perhaps when the newscasters in New York were reporting the Lisa Steinberg situation, if maybe they were laying across their goddamn desk behind their microphone in front of the camera, sobbing and bawling over the incredible injustice to one small child, that it made them angry and ripped their guts out, that if we, the people sitting home, impact on another person, we might not accept this stuff as okay. See? But it's done without passion. And they justify it. No, sorry. When I first began in television 20-some years ago as a writer, you were told by the networks there was an absolute cardinal rule. Do not put the viewer under stress. Which means don't talk about anything that will upset them. I mean, that's why you had Ozzy and Harriet and all the rest of that crap, you know? Because they didn't want anybody to be upset. Now, they've graduated a little bit because they realize there is an audience out there that's demanding something with some substance of some kind. So you had feelings, and if you don't have them today, if they aren't just kind of flowing through you like a wave, if you want to get an understanding of feelings again, go to a preschool. Go to a playground. Watch some little ones at work, or play, or whatever you want to call it. And it will help you see that feelings are very fleeting. And if you've been out of touch with your feelings for a long time, it's good to know that they're fleeting, because they seem overwhelming when you suddenly find yourself 40 years old about to cry for the first time, you know, since you were two. Everything in you says that you will never stop, that you will drown in the tears. But if you go watch these little gremlins, you will see that the feelings come and go in seconds. 1 minute they can be an absolute crisis, just destroyed. And then out of the corner of their eye, they'll spot Susie with a dump truck in the sandbox. And they'll go, oh. See, it's over. It's over. But for those of us that have repressed this stuff for a lot of years, there is an initial phase that you're going to go through that's very frightening, because you overreact to everything. Well, the reason you overreact to everything is you have stored this stuff up for your whole life. It's hard not to overreact. But doing the feeling work is not what creates that. You're already overreacting to stuff. I can remember being 8 years clean and sober, heavy into meditation, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to meditate for 4 hours. Because I was leaving my body, and I like leaving, you know, it's never been a problem. I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 hours of solid meditation. I would then shower, get nice clothes on, get in my car, pull out the driveway, turn right on Doheny. I've spent 4 hours in communion with God, get a half a block, and somebody would cut me off. Within seconds, I would be doing 95 miles an hour down this residential street, screaming obscenities out the window, trying to cut this guy off. See? And I thought my overreactions began when I started therapy. You know? And my therapist said, I think we better go right back and look at your behavior up until now. And then all this stuff started to come up. No? It's like constantly there, always going on, overreacting and not understanding why. Because I stored this stuff, man. I shoved it down, and it's looking for any out it can get. And if it's not coming out where it's supposed to go, it comes out sideways. Sideways means it comes out at people who didn't do anything to deserve it. It's when you go to the dry cleaners and your sport jacket isn't done and you punch the guy out behind the counter. You know, it's funny. He'd probably like to meet your mom when it's all over, because he knows where it came from. I know a lot of people like to meet mine. Most specifically, probably the people that I shot. Would be a guess. Unfortunately, I was unable to tell them at the time where it was coming from. So I said, I know it. It would have been unnecessary to do it. Okay? This stuff, if you are an adult today in recovery, if you come to me with a problem that's plaguing you in your adult life today, I guarantee if we sat down within an hour, I can trace the sucker back to something that happened when you were a child. So once the chemicals were no longer part of my life, I was continuing to have lots of problems. But compared to the ones I was having before I got off the chemicals, I didn't look too bad. The problem comes in when I start to feel terrible again, even though I'm doing everything in order to be recovered. And that's the big wall. The people were hitting day in, day out, and blowing their brains out, drinking, using again, just pulling themselves up by the bootstraps and hanging on, knowing God is going to fix it. But God don't believe in therapists. So they just kind of go on, you know. I mean, I heard a guy one time at an AA meeting make this statement. He was 27 years sober when he made this statement. And this was 27 years ago when he made it. He said it was a young people's meeting at the North Hollywood Clubhouse, and it was very small, and some nitwit had asked him to speak because he was one of the gods at that time of the program. And he said, "I really feel sorry for those of you who are here at this meeting tonight because you're too young to stay sober for the rest of your life." Whoa, you hear that one? I heard that one then, and I didn't know anything. I said, this guy is so miserable in his sobriety that if he is going to live as long as we're going to live, he wouldn't make it. He wouldn't make it. Hell of a message there, isn't there? I'm sure they're glad they asked him to speak. Do you need me for something? Oh, okay, you're just hovering. I just thought I'd ask in case... Okay, so I was missing some hand signals or something. Where was it? Ah! So, one of the things that happened to me in recovery was this. I woke up one day, and being sober was no longer enough. Scary. One day, it was no longer enough. Just the fact that that day I didn't drink or use drugs wasn't sufficient to keep me from wanting to kill myself. And for a long time it had been sufficient. And for a long time it was very important to me that on that day, that given day, I not drink alcohol or take drugs of any kind. But eventually, it was no longer enough for me. I'm not here to tell you what's for you. Yeah. Just for me. And when that reality hit, panic set in big time because I didn't know where the hell to go. You know? Luckily, I was in the single most abusive relationship I have ever been in my life with someone who was only too happy to tell me where to go. By the time she and I were together, I had been married 5 times, and she looked at me in the eyes and screamed, "Did you ever stop to think maybe it wasn't them?" No, I hadn't. Well, it never entered my mind. Because I knew in my heart if I could just find the right her, I would be okay. Message then being, obviously, I had not yet found the right her or she'd still be with me. Right? But being that I was getting up every morning wanting to die, I went to see a therapist. Went to see a woman, thinking that perhaps she could give me some inside information, because I'd been married 1 time drinking and using and 4 times in recovery, which led me to believe that I had a problem. Now, one thing that's probably one of the bright, beautiful gold stars of feeling recovery is children have like perfect intuition. Their intuitive process is wonderful. Your intuitive process is still wonderful. Nothing ever happened to your instincts got a little skewed, but nothing ever happened to your, because you needed to survive. So you had to think on a survival train, which is linear, rather than on an emotional feeling train of living life, right? But your intuition talked to you. You just were taught how not to listen to it. Simple things can be like someone saying you don't have to go to the bathroom when you're 3. You know, you try and process that one. See? And because it's coming from mom and dad, who are God, they must be right, which means something must be wrong with me. My God, at 5 times down the aisle, don't you think more than once a little voice said to me, this is not a good idea. Of course it did. But I was an incomplete human being. I needed a female partner to make me complete. So even though my intuition is saying to me, this is not a good idea, what we're doing here, I'm saying to my intuition, shut up. Okay? I need this woman in my life to make me whole. You understand that? Nitwit? Now, I'm not saying those exact words because I didn't understand that. I just knew I needed this person in my life. And when I walk in a room with a beautiful woman on my arm, I'm okay. This is external indication that I'm all right. If I wasn't all right, this beautiful woman would not be with me. She'd be with you. But she's not. She's with me. So your intuitive process still today is just perfect. Absolutely perfect. You just don't know how to trust it. Because, interesting thing, to be able to trust your intuition, it requires a capacity for risk and spontaneity. You can't be living a life of risk and spontaneity and repressing feelings at the same time. Because if you're repressing feelings and hiding from people who you really are, then you must edit everything you do, everything you say, and everywhere you go. And one of the things about getting unstuck is about lightening up, becoming less vigilant of your own life. I mean, we become hyper-vigilant of our own life. Where am I going? What am I going to talk to? What am I going to say? What are they going to think of me? I mean, it becomes like complete, and it works because it keeps us cut off from our feelings. As long as I'm focused up here thinking, I'm not feeling. For years in recovery, I was talking about the mind. My mind was driving me nuts. Yeah? I didn't know it was saving my life. You see, because I use compulsive thinking to cut me off from my feelings. As long as I'm thinking, I'm not in here. So I'm busy thinking. And I would try everything to stop it, but I couldn't stop it. Well, why couldn't I stop it? Because I was afraid of going in here where the feelings were. So as abusive as I was to myself with my own mind, you idiot, you halfwit, you've never done anything right. You don't even have a high school diploma. Other people are smarter, brighter, handsomer, taller, stronger, you dumb putz. You know, I mean, spending my day involved in that kind of thinking, to me, was preferable to feeling the pain. Because when we go back to go to the feelings, what it is about is pain. Why do we do all this stuff? Why do we spend all this money? Why do we go through so many men? Why do we go through so many women? Why do we go through so much food? Why do we not eat? Why do we go through so much drugs? Why do we go through so much alcohol? Because it hurts in here. And I don't want to feel the pain. That's that simple. Pat O'Gorman says, and I think she's right, if you've come out of a dysfunctional system, you will spend your life seeking out familiar pain. I have another friend that used to say it another way. And this was 20 years ago before any of this work was available. She used to say, you know what? I find myself spending my entire life demanding second best. Demanding second best. Seek out familiar pain. Because I know how to handle that pain. It's familiar. You see? And the tragedy is, in the unfamiliar pain lays my healing. You see, it is in it that I will heal. Not the pain I understand, the pain I don't understand. I will heal. So, it's one of the reasons it's nice, if at all possible, if you can decide to do some of this work to move your recovery forward, if you feel your recovery needs to be moved forward, is to be around supportive people. Find somebody else who's doing this work too. Go to a facility where they specialize in helping. I go out one night a month to Sierra Tucson to give a talk to patients, family from all the units. I run into people constantly, all the time, 20 years sober, 23 years sober, 17 years sober, 14 years sober, 12 years sober, 8 years sober, in both the eating disorder unit and in the other side. They came because they were dying. One of my best friends went through 14 years clean and sober. He finally found her. He looked for her all of his life, and he found her. After about 6 months with her, he called me from his car phone as he was pulling into the airport in Los Angeles to get on a jet to go to Sierra Tucson for 28 days of inpatient codependency treatment. This was my dear friend's parting words to civilization as he headed for treatment, 14 years clean and sober. I pick up my phone, I say, "Hello." He says, "It's just like fucking heroin," and hangs up. What makes this stuff so hard is that we have to not only work against our own resistance, we have to work against the resistance of the people in our lives, in our society, employers of myths that have been handed down for years about what is a woman and what is a man and what is really success and what is this and what is that. You know? So you're not all, you know, I mean, understand this. I mean, it's good to know this. I mean, one of the tragedies is to think that the reason that you're not doing this work 100 miles an hour is because it's your fault. No, you do not live in a friendly system to be walking around completely in touch with your feelings. And you're in New York, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know. Well, I was nuts before the guy got out of the airport. You know, it's like, I thought two things I really don't miss since I left the city. First thing I thought of was horns, and the next thing I thought of was four small pieces of rubber trying to stop 2,000 pounds of hurtling automobile in a short space. It's like, God, I live in the country, you know. People don't honk, you know. People don't squeal their tires. But there was an interesting thing to all that, because I was in therapy, and I was a vegetarian, and into macrobiotics, and I was running into good health and nutrition and exercise, and all that stuff was really important to me. And I'd be somewhere like Oregon giving a talk, an AA talk, right, talking about all this stuff and how really essential it was to good sobriety and good recovery, right? And then afterwards, somebody would come up to me, some smart aleck, and say, "You really believe all that stuff, right, about health and nutrition and exercise?" And I'd say, "Yeah, of course I do." You say, "How do you come to live in Los Angeles?" Well, I was going to the speech. Well, geez, I write for television, and television industry is in Los Angeles, and if I'm going to make a living at what I do, I've got to be what, you know, just this whole litany of bullshit, you know? When I finally got fed up and left, I did more television writing the first 2 months in Santa Fe when I arrived there than I had done the whole previous year living in the middle of the industry. Interesting, huh? See? One more lie to keep me from risk. Spontaneity, change, functional people. See, one of the things that always bothered me is I thought functional meant living in the same house in the same corner for 50 years with the same furniture. risk and spontaneity are like major ingredients.
I don't know how you do this. Could you please show me?
Well, to me, that's external verification that I'm flawed. That's admitting publicly something's wrong with me. Okay? They think they're okay, basically. So it takes all the fun out. It's very hard to embarrass somebody who thinks they're okay, basically. They're okay. And they may have made a mistake. Well, that's permitted. You see? It's permitted. It's okay to make mistakes. There's a story I'll tell, because it's a good one. It's worth telling. there's a guy in Santa Fe. I met a few people who I felt were, Bob, Matt, three or four, in Santa Fe who I felt were functional. And one guy, I was, well, I'm, you know, they're out there. A lot of them aren't drawing me yet either, but I'm getting better. It's getting to where we have a lot to say to each other now. They care about a lot of things. They care about children. They care about women. They care about the state of our society. They care about our planet. They care about an awful lot of things. Worries them. They want to know if there's going to be some place for their children. Yeah. They try and vote, but obviously it doesn't. You can see who's in there. It doesn't do a lot of good. Anyway, his son was 16, I think, or 17, and the big adventure was going to be Europe. They weren't going to go in the fall. And this was, I gotta go and I need this, and danced, okay. Great. So they made the arrangements and everything, and off the kid goes to Europe. And I'm up, and Dan and I are having tea, and the phone rings, and it is his son. He's been there 3 days. Like, I'm not sure. I think they were in Milan. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. It's gone away. And Dad says, how are you? And his son says, not good. Dad says, what's the matter? He says, it's cold. It's damp. He says, everything is very old, which is having an effect on me I wasn't prepared for. I'm having much more trouble because I don't speak the language than I thought I would have. It's making me really uncomfortable. Dan says to his son, come home. His son says, Dad, you forget, man. You know, we worked this one out. This is one of those, if you change this ticket before it's time, they'll kill you. And I got 3 weeks left before I can leave to come home. His dad says, get me the number of the nearest American Express office. Go to the office. Pick up the money. Come home. That simple. Come on. You had an idea. Didn't work out. It's okay. Come on. He didn't get, you know. What do you mean you don't want to come home? What do you mean come home? Come home? Come home? If I can spend 3 goddamn years in the army, you can spend 3 lousy weeks in Italy, for Christ's sake. Don't give me come home. You know how much this is costing? Stay and have a good time.
Now I can hear those of you out there, your minds turning, who are schooled in dysfunctional systems, saying, aren't we getting close to enabling here?
No, we're not, because the kid had to take a job and pay the money back. The message is, it's okay. You can have adventures. You can try things out. You can make mistakes. Come on. Okay. You made a mistake. We still love you. That's the kind of environment a child comes out of in a functional system. Many of us didn't have that. Guess what? We can create it now. We can create it now. One of the things I'm grateful for every night when I go to bed in my house, the dysfunction in the Earl family has stopped. It stopped. I've got a 3.5-year-old that doesn't know what it is. It stopped in my family. It's not going any further. And she'll never be able to pass it on because she won't know what it is. She will only be able to pass on what she's been given. You see? I go to bed at night and think about that, and it touches my heart. This child lives in a safe system. A safe system. Okay, now I'd like to give a few minutes for questions, if somebody's got some. I mean, come on, there must be one. Remember, there is a saying, it's really true, the only stupid one question is the one you don't ask. Yes? Am I going to talk at all about eating disorders? Okay. There are various eating disorders. One is not eating. One is eating and regurgitating what you have eaten. And the other is eating everything in sight. Eating is usually about comfort for those who are compulsive overeaters, who compulsively overeat, not bulimic. It is about, well, I guess bulimia too. It really is about comfort, about getting comfort. Now, I have a woman who is a friend of mine who is a psychologist at the University of California at Monterey, who's been studying this stuff for a while, and she says, you show me an extremely obese woman and I will show you an incested child. Now, I'm not in a position to say she's right or to say she's wrong. I know she's studied this stuff for 10 years now, and this is the conclusion that she's come to. I also believe that there is involved in eating disorders, and this is a dangerous thing. But there is such thing as food allergies, and we're addicted to the foods we are allergic to. Now, if you're a compulsive overeater, you can use that piece of information to kill yourself with. But for some of us, we can find specific foods that we are like just gone. Sugar is one for me. It's adios. Like I haven't eaten it now in probably 14 years, maybe. Yes, but it's only because I was allowed to eat my lifetime supply in a short period of time. That's the reason I gave up most things. I was allowed to have my lifetime supply in a short period of time. I gave up coffee when I got up one morning and tried to drink a cup, my throat closed, and it wouldn't go down. I thought, oh, I guess I'm done with coffee. I am not an expert on eating disorders. What do you want to know about them? I mean, they are one more addiction that we use to cut ourselves off from the feeling. It is one more external attempt with bulimia and anorexia to have the thin body, as I show you, and I will show you a thin exterior, meaning my interior is okay. Well, this is good. Okay, this brings up a good point. The inherent guillotine in that philosophy is if you are trying to patch an perceived internal deficit with external behavior, no matter what you do, it will never be enough. So you can't get thin enough, you can't earn enough money, you can't have an expensive enough car, you can't live in an expensive enough house, you can't have expensive enough clothes, you can't do it. Your partner, no matter how wonderful they are never enough, because nothing can ever be enough if you're trying to fix the inside thing. I can never remember in my life anything ever being enough. I don't recall. I always wanted more. Had to have more. 4th of July, we took our daughter up to a friend's house, high in the hills where we live, to watch the 4th of July fireworks, because you could see the fireworks being put off from 5 different locations in the town down below from his house. So, we ate, we played, we did all that. It's time for the fireworks. I've got her in my arms up on the roof, and she's just going wild. I mean, going pow at the fireworks and screaming at them and kicking her feet just off the chart with excitement and all this color in the sky and yelling out the colors, red, 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 green, green, white, 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 just having a wonderful time, right? So we watched the fireworks from this country club and then that country club and then this park over here, and now the big ones from A Mountain are about to start. when my daughter lays her head down on my shoulder and gets over by my ear and she says, "Can we go home now?" I said, "Well, the big fireworks are just about to start." She says, I don't want to see any more fireworks. I've had enough." I went, "What? Enough?" I was staying on the roof in the rain, you know. Oh, more. Yeah. No, she'd had enough. Enough. Because she's not trying to fix something in here with something out there. There's no need to. And so we went home. We went home. It's okay. Yes. Yes. Grief. If you don't know anything about grief, there is an excellent book called The Grief Recovery Handbook, written by a guy by the name of John Jane. It is going to the pain. Now, as a rule, any kind of... let me back up. The very first thing that will help a man is getting some information. One of the problems those of us who have come out of a dysfunctional system have is we've got an awful lot of bad information, and we don't have good information about a lot of things. So just understanding basic dysfunction and how it affects you is good. There is a brilliant book written by a woman called Alice Miller, and the book is entitled For Your Own Good. It really cuts to the core of what dysfunction is about. There is a book, my book is good because it covers all the bases. There's a book by John Lee called Flying Boy, Healing the Wounded Man, which is a very good book to show how what transpires when you're a boy affects your relationships with women as a man, as an adult. It'll Never Happen to Me by Claudia Black is a good book for just real basic stuff. Pia Melody has a book out on codependency, which is very good. Real solid information. Start with some information. Get some help. Group therapy is great for us. I really, although I went through individual therapy for a number of years, I'm a big supporter of group therapy, because we need to see other people, other men who look okay and suddenly fall apart in front of our very eyes. Nothing eventually was more healing than me than when I was in a group and a guy walked in looking really good and together, you know. "Hi, how are you? Good. You good? Hey, great. You okay? Yeah, yeah." Sits down and a half hour later he's on the floor, right? And I go, "Oh, okay. Okay." Yeah. I have a dear friend who lives in Southern California, and when I can get him to my workshop, I get him to come because he's about 6'3". He's got long, flowing blonde hair like Jesus. I mean, he is truly like a god, right? I mean, and I always thought if you could look like that, everything would be wonderful. And when men look at him, forget women, but when men look at him, that's what they see. If I look like this guy, my life would be fine. And obviously very manly, right? Master in martial arts, all that bullshit, right? The one thing I love about Don is he sobs. So if I can get him in a workshop and get him up front at a table, it doesn't take me 10 minutes to set him off, see? And then he's laying across the table. Well, what that does is it gives every guy in the room for the rest of the day permission to cry. Because he not only cries, his whole being is wrapped. So that's just little steps I would take to start. But basically, for most of us men, grieving is the first real doorway. Freedom for us. You're next.
If the recovery process begins in your home and starts to become functional, what's the story you know already? Have had a taste of a dysfunction. What are the chances of them coming out?
Excellent. They have
Because part of this process is undoing X number of years of dysfunction. So when I finally walked into the therapist's office, I was 43 years old. I had 43 years of dysfunction. If your child is 8, they've had 8 years. And children seem to respond better. You see, because all that stuff is still there with them, the need to express their feelings, the need to be real. Sure, it may have been smashed. Maybe they've been pulled in. Maybe there are signs of problems with them. But so far, my experience with children has been, and friends of mine who are parents, is the kids respond really well. Really well. I've seen whole families heal, and it's beautiful. I've seen families go apart because it's not uncommon in dysfunction for if one of the two partners in a relationship starts to try and do something for their own good, it will be perceived by their mate as a threat. And so their mate will try and stop them from this path, which is a real, which can be a deal breaker. Can be a deal breaker. Yeah.
As a space and a higher power coming to play, it's like working on all this stuff. Like, I think you believe if I have a higher power and trust in it, everything's going to be okay, which is falling short, baby. And how do you do that in relationship, like working on all this stuff?
Okay. The guy who wrote this book, Grief Recovery Handbook, okay, is also a member of the program. His son died 3 days old. He went to his peer group and they said, turn it over. Okay? They said, you can have another son. They said all kinds of well-meaning, they were well-intentioned. This was not, no one trying to intentionally harm him. When he found himself sitting on the beach in Santa Monica, this was a vet, an untreated vet with some serious problems, with a 357 Magnum in his mouth, ready to blow his brains out, he realized somebody had lied to him. And the conclusion that he reached was that turn it over is the biggest avoidance phrase known to man, because no one was giving him permission to feel his pain. The way it works is now, if I am in a situation that upsets me and hurts me, I must cry my tears or get my anger out. And then if it's truly something out of my hands, I then surrender it. What I difference is now is I used to try and cut myself off from me and what I was feeling by having this belief in God. And what I've learned is if I can have the feelings and then say to God, it's yours now, my life really works beautifully. It's a matter of honoring my humanness first and then turning to God. Are we okay here? Are you... No. I mean, are we okay in understanding what I'm saying? Yeah. So that, in essence, is it. And there's a period of time almost when doing this self-discovery work where, for an awful lot of us, our spiritual program went right in the toilet. Because I became so involved in feelings and me and what am I feeling and what's going on and this and that. I mean, I just became consumed by it. And one day I turned around and I had no spiritual program to speak of. And I said to myself, Bob, I think you better turn this back over to God. And inside I went weak. And I had created for me a space in which the fear was, now that I had found myself, if I was to surrender to God, I would have to give myself up again. And that's the lie. Not true. I have found myself. I am today the human being God created me to be. And I have a beautiful, we have a great relationship with God in our house. But it's light. And it's much different than I perceived before. It's about a healthy interdependency between me and you and me and everybody else on this planet. And it's nice. It's nice. It's very nice. But it's work. Nothing. The death of my abuser didn't do anything except I don't have to go look into her face anymore. I had
Well, I was always very hard, you know. I mean, it's when the abuser is still alive and dysfunctional, and I was away from her and doing all this work and crying and screaming and beating and banging. I'd go out and I'd say, hey, that's okay. I worked it out. Me and Mom can now sit down and have a conversation. I'd drive 75 miles to Fallbrook. I would knock on the door. She would open the door, and there would be that untreated face. And all the work went right out the goddamn window. I one more time wanted to take her and break her neck like a chicken. So, to avoid that, I had to do all the grieving and saying goodbye to her as a mother that she would never be what I needed for her to be. She couldn't be what I needed for her to be. She passed on what was passed. You know all the words in the rules. So that by the time she physically died, she had already been dead for me for a long time. So it really changed nothing other than guilt trips home. Now, for other people, that's not necessarily the case. Yes?
Yeah.
A couple more, and we'll quit.
Yeah. Do you have a preference to any specific programs I'm trying it's difficult to some of the literature.
Oh, you mean like... Yeah, well, it is a little, but they're new. So I think the thing I find in SLA is that it's more the individual group as opposed to the literature. So it's finding a group that sort of isn't shaming and maybe kind of feels safe and nurturing to you and try just to, because everything when it's new has got problems. You know, they're getting the bugs out. That's all. It's improving every day. There's some great groups. I'm only going to take a couple more. So who's had their hand up for a while? Okay, over here and then over here. Okay, here for.
Well, I wanted to ask you if you did deal with the problem of like being quiet. Okay, I went through the same thing. I still do it. There'll be nobody in the house, and I will be tiptoeing around like a cat. I'm known to be quiet in that aspect. As far as voice is concerned, I'm a loud person. But I still have that in me. You know, and my father's been dead for 3 years, and God bless me, he's sober the last 3 years of his life. But I, like you, at a young age, would just tell to the refrigerator, the whole thing you described, if you deal with it, if you didn't have
Well, I, by starting to make noise, because I began to find, I hate to sound like oversimplification here, but now, one friend I have dealt with it by taking tap dancing lessons. He went and took tap dancing lessons. And this guy's a gorilla, too, right? So here's this gorilla at about, I don't know, God, he must be 6'5", 260 pounds. You know, tap dancing, right? But it was noise, and it was him making the noise, and it began the healing process and gave himself permission to make other noise. So maybe, like I'm trying to learn to play harmonica, it's very hard for me to blow in it and make noise, even when nobody's home, much less when somebody's home, to make that noise. But I'm going to stay with it because that's one more thing for me, is blowing and making that noise is setting me free. And when I'm not making noise, I'm constrained. See? I'm tight when I'm not making noise. So I need to find ways. Okay? Over here. Yes?
When you talk about feeling
the
pain, I've been
from counselor to counselor, because they say, what do you want to meet?
I don't know what to
meet. That you want to meet yourself. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm
talking about. Well, if they don't, then you want to go someplace else. It is perfectly, you want to meet yourself, you want to get in touch with your feelings, experience your feelings, and learn to express them appropriately. It is perfectly okay to ask any therapist for a 20-minute free interview, no money. If they don't like that, don't go to them, okay? I've yet to meet a responsible therapist that does not also want to interview you, because responsible therapists understand that if they don't have some kind of connection with you, they can't really help you, see? And the tragedy in our society is never mind. Anyway, a lot of times they have to, never mind. Yes.
Yeah, hey, Bob. I tell you, this is just a brief lead up to the question I want to ask you. Years ago, one of my favorite TV
shows with Star Team Hunt, and I know you wrote the script for that. And I'll never forget, this is while I was still active drinking, feeling a lot of feelings that came from a violent dysfunctional family, physical violence. I remember watching David Soul on a talk show, and I guess he was in some sort of recovery, and I don't know if you had any impact on him.
No, I didn't.
I
would like to have, but anyway, go ahead.
I tried to call him, I made some phone calls to see what he was doing to turn his life around. My question is this. I'm financially bankrupt, practically. The IRS a lot of money. I've got almost 3 years in recovery. Stopped smoking, stopped with the coffee. I have a problem with the sex. I'm up from D.C., born and raised in New York. My wife's down there. I'm having problems with that. I think we're 3 months, got married in sobriety. I don't have the money. I've been going sporadically to therapy, and my therapist, who deals with ACOA issues, says, you can't keep the lid on anymore, Charlie, with your feelings. You know, the external remedies are not working for you. And what I'm reaching out with sincerity here is, you know, I'd love to get into one of these 28-day programs in Arizona. I hear about Karen's Family Services in Pennsylvania.
Karen's good.
I don't have the money. I called for something for a week. It's like $975. What do I do for myself? You know, I really want to get into some intense therapy, group therapy, one-on-one. I can't get anything consistently going because I'm...
Okay, there's two or three things you can do, right? One is that there are therapists who work with groups who do it on a sliding scale, down to $5, right? The other is that some of these, talk to these places when you call them. Sometimes they will work out some kind of arrangement with you. Attend a lot of meetings that are dealing with feelings. ACA meetings are great because it's where people are bringing stuff up. It's free, you know, and then just keep going on the path. I mean, I hope I'm answering your question. I know a lot of these places are a lot of money. Well, that's one of the reasons they can provide the care that they can provide, you know, because unfortunately we live in a society in which healing is not of any issue. I mean, in case anybody's missed the point, you live in the only industrialized nation in the world that does not have health care for its citizens. So, places that do survive have got to charge a lot of money. They are very good. Look for intensive workshops. There's a place in California called Cork Hill. You can get, if you can find Sharon and Weichscheider Cruz and Joe Cruz, they're in North Dakota or somewhere. They could probably put you in touch with people who are doing Cork Hill in the area where you are. It's like a 4-day, really intensive, inexpensive feeling releaser. There's stuff out there. You got to just look and ask. It's available. I'm sorry there's no main resource. I'd like to answer more, but I really can't. I think it's time for us to close. I can't think of anything to add. I mean, this is... Does anybody got something they absolutely have to ask? Too many. Yeah, quick. Make it short. No lead-in.
I want to know, I can't cross. I've tried. I've gone to therapy. From my childhood, I've gotten into this. I shut down completely. All feelings, all everything. I just shut it off just like that. And my problem is now, I'm 3.5 years sober. I want to feel, I don't know how. And I go to therapist and they sit there and go, well, what do you want? And I said, that's what I'm coming to see you for. Because I don't know what the hell I want. Because I don't know what anything is. I've come from a family that was so dysfunctional that it was easier to...
I don't know how you do this. Could you please show me? Well, to me, that's external verification that I'm flawed. That's admitting publicly something's wrong with me. Okay? They think they're okay, basically. It takes all the fun out. It's very hard to embarrass somebody who thinks they're okay, basically. They're okay. And they may have made a mistake. Well, that's permitted. You see? It's permitted. It's okay to make mistakes. There's a story I'll tell because it's a good one. It's worth telling. There's a guy in Santa Fe. I met a few people who I felt were Bob Matt, three or four, in Santa Fe who I felt were functional. And one guy, I was, well, I'm, you know, they're out there. I just, a lot of them aren't drawing me yet either, but I'm getting better. It's getting to where we have a lot to say to each other now. They care about a lot of things. They care about children. They care about women. They care about the state of our society. They care about our planet. They care about an awful lot of things. Worries them. They want to know if there's going to be some place for their children. Yeah. They try and vote, but obviously it doesn't look, you can see who's in there. It doesn't do a lot of good. His son was 16, I think, and or 17, and the big adventure was going to be Europe. For they weren't going to go in the fall. Going to go in the fall. And this was, I got to go, and I need this, and Dan said, okay, great. So they made the arrangements and everything, and off the kid goes to Europe. And I'm up, and Dan and I are having tea, and the phone rings, and it is his son. He's been there 3 days. Like, I'm not sure. I think they were in Milan. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. It's gone away. And he says, Dad says, how are you? And his son says, not good. Dad says, what's the matter? He says, it's cold, it's damp. He says, everything is very old, which is having an effect on me I wasn't prepared for. I'm having much more trouble because I don't speak the language than I thought I would have. It's making me really uncomfortable. Dan says to his son, come home. His son says, Dad, you forget, man. You know, we worked this one out. This is one of those, if you change this ticket before it's time, they'll kill you. And I got 3 weeks to left before I can leave to come home. His dad says, get me the number of the nearest American Express office. Go to the office. Pick up the money. Come home. That simple. Come on. You had an idea. Didn't work out. It's okay. Come on. He didn't get, you know, what do you mean you don't want to come home? What do you mean come home? Come home? Come home? If I can spend 3 goddamn years in the army, you can spend 3 lousy weeks in Italy, for Christ's sake. Don't give me come home. You know how much this is costing? Stay and have a good time. Now, I can hear those of you out there, your minds turning, who are schooled in dysfunctional systems, saying, aren't we getting close to enabling here? No, we're not, because the kid had to take a job and pay the money back. Had to take a job and pay the money back. The message is, it's okay. You can have adventures. You can try things out. You can make mistakes. Come on. Okay. You made a mistake. We still love you. That's the kind of environment a child comes out of in a functional system. Many of us didn't have that. Guess what? We can create it now. We can create it now. One of the things I'm grateful for every night when I go to bed in my house, the dysfunction in the Earl family has stopped. It stopped. I've got a 3-and-a-half-year-old that doesn't know what it is. It stopped in my family. It's not going any further. And she'll never be able to pass it on because she won't know what it is. She will only be able to pass on what she's been given. You see? I go to bed at night and think about that, and it touches my heart. This child lives in a safe system. Okay, now I'd like to give a few minutes for questions, if somebody's got some. I mean, come on, there must be one. And remember, there is a saying, it's really true, the only stupid one question is the one you don't ask. Yes? Am I going to talk at all about eating disorders?
Okay. There are various eating disorders. One is not eating. One is eating and regurgitating what you have eaten. And the other is eating everything in sight. Eating is usually about comfort for those who are compulsive overeaters, who compulsively overeat, not bulimic. It is about, well, I guess bulimia too. It really is about comfort, about getting comfort. Now, I have a woman who is a friend of mine who is a psychologist at the University of California at Monterey, who's been studying this stuff for a while, and she says, you show me an extremely obese woman and I will show you an incested child. Now, I'm not in a position to say she's right or to say she's wrong. I know she's studied this stuff for 10 years now, and this is the conclusion that she's come to. I also believe that for there is involved in eating disorders, and this is a dangerous thing, but there is such thing as food allergies, and we're addicted to the foods we are allergic to. Now, if you're a compulsive overeater, you can use that piece of information to kill yourself with. But for some of us, we can find specific foods that we are like just gone. Sugar is one for me. It's adios, like I haven't eaten it now in probably 14 years, maybe. Uh-huh. Yes, but it's only because I was allowed to eat my lifetime supply in a short period of time. That's the reason I gave up most things. I was allowed to have my lifetime supply in a short period of time. I gave up coffee when I got up one morning and tried to drink a cup, my throat closed and it wouldn't go down. I thought, oh, I guess I'm done with coffee. I am not an expert on eating disorders. What do you want to know about them? I mean, they are one more addiction that we use to cut ourselves off from the feeling. It is one more external attempt with bulimia and anorexia to have the thin body. I will show you a thin exterior, meaning my interior is okay. Well, this is good. Okay, this brings up a good point. The inherent guillotine in that philosophy is, if you are trying to patch an perceived internal deficit with external behavior, no matter what you do, it will never be enough. So you can't get thin enough, you can't earn enough money, you can't have an expensive enough car, you can't live in an expensive enough house, you can't have expensive enough clothes. You can't do it. Your partner, no matter how wonderful they are never enough, because nothing can ever be enough if you're trying to fix the inside thing. I can never remember in my life anything ever being enough. I don't recall. I always wanted more, had to have more. 4th of July, we took our daughter up to a friend's house high in the hills where we live to watch the 4th of July fireworks, because you could see the fireworks being put off from 5 different locations in the town down below from his house. So, we ate, we played, we did all that. It's time for the fireworks. I've got her in my arms up on the roof, and she's just going wild. I mean, going pow at the fireworks and screaming at them and kicking her feet just off the chart with excitement and all this color in the sky and yelling out the colors, red, 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 green, green, white, 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 just having a wonderful time, right? So we watched the fireworks from this country club and then that country club and then this park over here, and now the big ones from A Mountain are about to start. And my daughter lays her head down on my shoulder and gets over by my ear and she says, can we go home now? I said, well, the big fireworks are just about to start. She says, I don't want to see any more fireworks. I've had enough. I went, what? Enough? I was staying on the roof in the rain, you know. Oh, more. Yeah. No, she'd had enough. Enough.
because he's not trying to fix something in here with something out there. There's no need to. And so we went home. We went home. It's okay. Yes. Yes. Grief. 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 If you don't know anything about grief, there is an excellent book called The Grief Recovery Handbook, written by a guy by the name of John James. It is going to the pain. Now, as a rule, any kind of... let me back up. The very first thing that will help a man is getting some information. One of the problems those of us who have come out of a dysfunctional system have is we've got an awful lot of bad information and we don't have good information about a lot of things. So, just understanding basic dysfunction and how it affects you is good. There is a brilliant book written by a woman called Alice Miller, and the book is entitled For Your Own Good. It really cuts to the core of what dysfunction is about. There is a book, my book is good because it covers all the bases. There's a book by John Lee called Flying Boy, Healing the Wounded Man, which is a very good book to show how what transpires when you're a boy affects your relationships with women as a man, as an adult. It Will Never Happen to Me by Claudia Black is a good book for just real basic stuff. Pia Melody has a book out on codependency, which is very good, real solid information. Start with some information, get some help. Group therapy is great for us. I really, although I went through individual therapy for a number of years, I'm a big supporter of group therapy, because we need to see other people, other men who look okay and suddenly fall apart in front of our very eyes. Nothing eventually was more healing than me than when I was in a group and a guy walked in looking really good and together, you know. Hi, how are you? Good. You good? Hey, great. You okay? Yeah, yeah. Sits down and a half hour later he's on the floor, right? And I go, oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I have a dear friend who lives in Southern California, and when I can get him to my workshop, I get him to come because he's about 6 feet three. He's got long, flowing blonde hair like Jesus. I mean, he is truly like a god, right? I mean, and I always thought if he could look like that, everything would be wonderful. And when men look at him, forget women, but when men look at him, that's what they see. If I looked like this guy, my life would be fine. And obviously very manly, right? Master in martial arts, all that bullshit, right? The one thing I love about Don is he sobs. So, if I can get him in a workshop and get him up front at a table, it doesn't take me 10 minutes to set him off, see? And then he's laying across the table. Well, what that does is it gives every guy in the room for the rest of the day permission to cry. Because he not only cries, his whole being is racked. So that's just little steps I would take to start. But basically, for most of us men, grieving is the first real doorway of freedom for us. Your next thing.
If the recovery process begins in your home, it starts to become functional. What's the story you already have had a case of a dysfunction? What are the chances?
Excellent. They have, because part of this process is undoing X number of years of dysfunction. So when I finally walked into the therapist's office, I was 43 years old. I had 43 years of dysfunction. If your child is 8, they've had 8 years. And children seem to respond better. You see, because all that stuff is still there with them, the need to express their feelings, the need to be real. Sure, it may have been smashed. Maybe they've been pulled in. Maybe there are signs of problems with them. But so far, my experience with children has been, and friends of mine who are parents, is the kids respond really well. Really well. I've seen whole families heal, and it's beautiful. I've seen families go apart because it's not uncommon dysfunction for if one of the two partners in a relationship starts to try and do something for their own good, it will be perceived by their mate as a threat. And so their mate will try and stop them from this path, which is a real, which can be a deal breaker. Can be a deal breaker. Yeah. Okay. The guy who wrote this book, Grief Recovery Handbook, okay, is also a member of the program. His son died 3 days old. He went to his peer group and they said, turn it over. Okay? They said, you can have another son. They said all kinds of well-meaning, they were well-intentioned. This was not, no one trying to intentionally harm him. When he found himself sitting on the beach in Santa Monica, this was a vet, an untreated vet with some serious problems, with a .357 Magnum in his mouth ready to blow his brains out, he realized somebody had lied to him. And the conclusion that he reached was that turn it over is the biggest avoidance phrase known to man, because no one was giving him permission to feel his pain. The way it works is now, if I am in a situation that upsets me and hurts me, I must cry my tears or get my anger out. And then if it's truly something out of my hands, I then surrender it. What the difference is now is I used to try and cut myself off from me and what I was feeling by having this belief in God. And what I've learned is, if I can have the feeling and then say to God, it's yours now, my life really works beautifully. It's a matter of honoring my humanness first and then turning to God. Are we okay here? Are you... No. I mean, are we okay in understanding what I'm saying? Yeah, so that in essence is it. And there's a period of time almost when doing this self-discovery work where for an awful lot of us our spiritual program went right in the toilet because I became so involved in feelings and me and what am I feeling and what's going on and this and that. I mean, I just became consumed by it. And one day I turned around and I had no spiritual program to speak of. And I said to myself, Bob, I think you better turn this back over to God, and inside I went weak. And I had created for me a space in which the fear was, now that I had found myself, if I was to surrender to God, I would have to give myself up again. And that's the lie, not true. I have found myself. I am today the human being God created me to be, and I have we have a great relationship with God in our house. But it's light, and it's much different than I perceived before. It's about a healthy interdependency between me and you, and me and everybody else on this planet. And it's nice. It's nice. It's very nice. But it's work. Nothing. The death of my abuser didn't do anything except I don't have to go look into her face anymore. I was always very hard, you know. I mean, it's when the abuser is still alive and dysfunctional, and I was away from her and doing all this work and crying and screaming and beating and banging. I'd go out and I'd say, hey, that's okay. I worked it out. Me and Mom can now sit down and have a conversation. I'd drive 75 miles to Fallbrook. I would knock on the door. She would open the door. And there would be that untreated face. And all the work went right out the goddamn window. I one more time wanted to take her and break her neck like a chicken. So, to avoid that,
I had to do all the grieving and saying goodbye to her as a mother that she would never be what I needed for her to be. She couldn't be what I needed for her to be. She passed on what was passed on. You know all the words in the rules. So that by the time she physically died, she had already been dead for me for a long time. So it really changed nothing other than guilt trips home. Now, for other people, that's not necessarily the case. Yes?
Yeah.
A couple more, and then we'll quit.
Yeah. Do you have a preference to any specific programs or... I'm finding it difficult to... some of the literature I find like very
Oh, you mean like, right? Yeah. Well, it is a little, but they're new. So, I think the thing I find in SLA is that it's more the individual group as opposed to the literature. So it's finding a group that sort of isn't shaming and maybe kind of feels safe and nurturing to you. And try just to, because everything when it's new has got problems. You know, they're getting the bugs out. That's all. It's improving every day. It's a great group. I'm only going to take a couple more. So who's had their hand up for a while? Okay, over here and then over here. Okay, here first.
Well, I wanted to ask you, if you did deal with the problem of like being quiet. Okay, I went through the same thing. I still do it. There'll be nobody in the house, and I will be tiptoeing around like a cat. I'm known to be, you know, quiet and that, as far as witness is concerned, I'm a loud person. But I still have that in me, you know, and my father's been dead for 3 years, and God bless him, he's still the last 3 years of his life. But I, like you, at a young age, the tiptoes, to the refrigerator, the whole thing, whatever, you know, the whole thing you described, if you deal with it, if you did, how?
Well, I, by starting to make noise, because I began to, I mean, I hate to sound like oversimplification here, but now, one friend I have dealt with it by taking tap dancing lessons. He went and took tap dancing lessons. And this guy's a gorilla, too, right? So here's this gorilla at about, I don't know, God, he must be 6'5", 260 pounds. You know, tap dancing, right? But it was noise, and it was him making the noise, and it began the healing process and gave himself permission to make other noise. So maybe, like I'm trying to learn to play harmonica, it's very hard for me to blow in it and make noise, even when nobody's home, much less when somebody's home, to make that noise. But I'm going to stay with it because that's one more thing for me, is blowing and making that noise is setting me free. And when I'm not making noise, I'm constrained. See? I'm tight when I'm not making noise. So I need to find ways. Okay? Over here. Yes.
When you talk about feeling the feelings, from counselor to counselor, because they say, what do you want to meet? I don't know what you want.
That you want to meet yourself. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, if they don't, then you want to go someplace else. It is perfectly, you want to meet yourself, you want to get in touch with your feelings, experience your feelings, and learn to express them appropriately. It is perfectly okay to ask any therapist for a 20-minute free interview, no money. If they don't like that, don't go to them, okay? I've yet to meet a responsible therapist that does not also want to interview you, because responsible therapists understand that if they don't have some kind of connection with you, they can't really help you, see? And the tragedy in our society is that nah, never mind. Anyway, a lot of times they have to, never mind. Yes.
Yeah, how you doing, Bob? I tell you, this is just a brief read up to the question I want to ask you. Years ago, one of my favorite TV shows was Starsky Hunt. And I know you wrote the script for that. And I'll never forget, this is while I was still actually drinking, feeling a lot of the feelings that came from a violent, dysfunctional family, physical violence. I remember watching David Soul on a talk show, and I guess he was in some sort of recovery, and I don't know if you had any impact on him.
No, I didn't.
I
would like to have, but anyway, go ahead.
I tried to call him, I don't make some phone calls to see what he was doing to turn his life around. My question is this.
I'm financially bankrupt, practically. I owe the IRS a lot of money. I've got almost 3 years in recovery. Stopped smoking, stopped with the coffee. I have problems with sex. I'm up from D.C., born and raised in New York. My wife's down there. I'm having problems with that. I was 3 months, got married in sobriety. I don't have the money. I've been going sporadically to therapy, and my therapist, who deals with ACOA issues, says, you can't keep the lid on anymore, Charlie, with your feelings. You know, the external remedies are not working for me. And what I'm reaching out with sincerity here is, you know, I'd love to get into one of these 28-day programs in Arizona. I hear about Karen's Family Services in Pennsylvania.
Karen's good.
I don't have the money. I call a place up and for a week it's like $975. What do I do for myself? You know, I really want to get into some intense therapy, group therapy, one-on-one. I can't get anything consistently going because I'm...
Okay, there's two or three things you can do, right? One is that there are therapists who work with groups who do it on a sliding scale, down to $5, right? The other is that some of these, talk to these places when you call them. Sometimes they will work out some kind of arrangement with you. Attend a lot of meetings that are dealing with feelings. ACA meetings are great because it's where people are bringing stuff up. It's free, you know, and then just keep going on the path. I mean, I hope I'm answering your question. I know a lot of these places are a lot of money. Well, that's one of the reasons they can provide the care that they can provide, you know, because unfortunately we live in a society in which healing is not of any issue. I mean, in case anybody's missed the point, you live in the only industrialized nation in the world that does not have health care for its citizens. So... So places that do survive have got to charge a lot of money. They're very good. Look for intensive workshops. There's a place in California called Cork Hill. You can get, if you can find Sharon and Whiteschneider Cruz and Joe Cruz, they're in North Dakota or somewhere. They could probably put you in touch with people who are doing Cork Hill in the area where you are. It's like a 4-day, really intensive, inexpensive feeling releaser. There's stuff out there. You got to just look and ask. It's available. I'm sorry there's no main resource. I'd like to answer more, but I really can't. I think it's time for us to close. I can't think of anything to add. I mean, this is... Does anybody got something they absolutely have to ask? Too many. Yeah, quick. Make it short. No lead-in.
I want to know... I can't cross. I've tried. I've gone through therapy. From my childhood, I've gotten into this. I shut down completely. All feelings, all everything. I just shut it off just like that. And my problem is now, I'm 3.5 years sober. I'm on a field. I don't know how it is. And I go to therapists and they sit there and go, well, what do you want? And I said, that's what I'm coming to see you for. Because I don't know what the hell I want, because I don't know what anything is. I've come from a family that was so dysfunctional that it was easier.
The original master recording cut off at this point.